Our next case today is number 072804, Peels against the Terre Haute Police Department and Trey Gilbert, et al. Mr. Wallace.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Michael C. Wallace. I'm from the law office of Robertson Bishop in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Robert Peels. Mr. Peels filed a complaint against the county of Vigo and the Terre Haute Police Department, among several named officers, in that he claimed retaliatory prosecution, false arrest, illegal search, and excessive force. This stemmed from two arrests that happened on September 15, 2003 and August 15, 2005. This matter went before the lower court on a motion for summary judgment, to which the court granted the officers and the government's motion in regards to the false arrest, the retaliatory prosecution, and the illegal search, but did allow the excessive force to be heard by a trial, by a jury, to which the jury granted in favor of the officers during that. On appeal, Mr. Peels raises four issues, the first being that the district court improperly granted summary judgment on the claim of retaliatory prosecution. In order to prevail on a claim of retaliatory prosecution, a plaintiff must show a causal connection between a defendant's retaliatory animus and subsequent injury and any sort of retaliatory action. Here, Mr. Peels showed a retaliatory animus on the part of Officer Gilbert. Peels filed a complaint to the Terre Haute Police Department about the conduct of Officer Gilbert, with the example as shown in the appendix that was dated on January 4th, 2005. But for some reason, I think the complaint itself is dated December 29, 2004. In any event, Officer Gilbert arrests Mr. Peels on January 15, 2005, and he is arrested for resisting an arrest. The question that comes before the court is whether or not there is probable cause then since it is not the prosecutor that is alleged to bring the retaliatory prosecution, then a plaintiff must show that there was an absence of probable cause. Within the motion for summary judgment, Peels, in his statement of facts, says that Officer Gilbert only told him that there was a warrant for his arrest, and then that Officer Gilbert then goes to check in whether or not that is true. However, Officer Gilbert, in his affidavit, says there's an order to wait. Right there is a question of fact that should be presented to a jury rather than decided on a motion for summary judgment.
They agree, at least, that he said there's a warrant out, right?
Yes, but at the same time, Officer Gilbert did have to check. Mr. Peels did state that within his affidavit. Because Mr. Peels has shown that Officer Gilbert had the requisite animosity, i.e. the filing of a complaint against him, since Peels has the right to exercise his free speech to file administrative charges against officers, and then lastly, Peels has shown that there was no probable cause for him to be arrested since there was no order to stop. Because of this, the granting of the summary judgment motion in regards to the retaliatory prosecution was an error, and therefore we ask that this matter be remanded back to the lower court for final hearing. The second issue Mr. Peel raises is that the district court improperly granted summary judgment on the claim of lawful search. The Fourth Amendment of the United States, we know, protects the rights of people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. A search that is conducted without a warrant issued upon probable cause is per se unreasonable, and then therefore we only have to look to a few specifically established and well-delineated exceptions to this. Here we have Mr. Peels being arrested, at least according to Mr. Peels' statement, in his garage. After he is detained in his garage, the garage itself is searched. The officers didn't have a search warrant for that, and the officers had no reason to search the garage. What Mr. Peels was being arrested for was a warrant on a battery and invasion of privacy. It did not include anything of weapons or contraband or narcotics and things of that nature. Even though not raised by the officers in their motion, the district court, however, decided that the search of the garage at least was a protective sweep, and this was justified. But a protective sweep is narrowly confined to a cursory visual inspection of those places in which a person may be hiding. A protective sweep is limited to looking in closets and other spaces immediately adjoining the places of arrest. A protective sweep is not a full search of the premises, but may extend only to a cursory inspection of those spaces where a person may be found. This sweep then must not last longer than necessary to dispel any reasonable suspicion of dangers to the officers. However, Mr. Peels pointed out in his affidavit that the officers took longer in their cursory search. They did more than just look. They brought in, according to Mr. Peels, two canine units to assist them in the search of the garage. If they were just picking up on a warrant to arrest, why would they need to search with two canine units? Additionally, Mr. Peels also stated that the officers then entered into his house. This was far beyond the needs to secure the garage and secure Mr. Peels to take him into custody. And also noting, even though it was not raised in the briefs, the district court granted the motion for summary judgment on the unlawful search, stating that Mr. Peels had no damages.
The question of the existence of probable cause is uniquely that of the court, isn't it?
Yes, it is, Your Honor.
Then what's the beef? That's what he did. He decided there was probable cause. Listened to the evidence, made a decision on the subject, and that was the end of that. That's the only issue in the case, isn't it?
For the unlawful search, Your Honor?
Yeah.
Well, no, because he's arrested. And just to make sure, Your Honor, at least according to the appeal, nothing was raised about the false arrest.
Well, okay, but within the unlawful search, if there's probable cause, they have a right to search, right?
No, Your Honor, they have a right to search to make sure for the safety of the officers.
Right. That's what we're talking about.
Right.
And the perimeters of that are set, I assume, as a matter of law, not as a matter of fact.
Well, the law states that the protective sweep is there for the...
I'm fairly well aware.
Okay. And then, Your Honor, I must be missing your question. I apologize for that.
Well, I say, what would you have the court do beyond what they did? They said that the sweep was perfectly appropriate, the court said.
Well, we disagree with the court statement there.
Aha. Uh-huh. That's what I wanted to hear.
Okay.
That's
your... Okay. Yeah, again, and that's why I was getting back to you, Your Honor, that it was inappropriate because the officers did more than what was anticipated for a visual cursory examination of the areas for their safety.
Well, you may be minimizing the latitude they have to the point where all they can do is glance around the room.
Well, I understand that, but, I mean, two of the searches, and I think some of the examples that were given within the case law, the closets, immediate vicinity, just to make sure.
What did they look in?
They looked in the garage. They brought two dogs.
They were in the garage, weren't they?
Excuse me?
They were in the garage.
I understand that, Your Honor.
They didn't have to go into the garage. They were there.
That's correct.
Right.
According to Mr. Peels' affidavit, yes.
Yeah.
All right. So at least there is a need for the cursory examination of the garage. There was no need for an examination inside the home, and there was no need to bring in two canine units to conduct a search.
I notice in your brief you don't cite any authority, however, for the proposition that it was a violation of the Fourth Amendment to bring in the dogs. Is there? Is that a contrary?
At least I didn't cite any case law, Your Honor. I think the argument I was trying to make is just what I posed here, is that that was excessive.
This case is unique. It's the only one you can find where you think the bringing in of dogs is by itself excessive.
That I can't answer right now, Your Honor.
No,
I apologize for that.
You found no case that says bringing a dog, it is excessive, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I'm saying it is in this factual circumstance where the district court judge on his own volition said it was protective sweep.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does the record show whether these canine dogs were trained to ferret out drugs and contraband, or were they trained to ferret out explosive
devices? I don't think the record states any of them in that regard. I'm sorry, Your Honor, for stepping on your toes. But no, I don't believe there is anything in the record since it was part of the summary judgment motions.
I see. Thank you.
Okay. You would have wanted the search, cursory, or otherwise confined to the garage. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you say, so it seems the thing, major thing you're objecting to is they went in the house.
That too, Your Honor, yes.
With the dogs, I know, were they there or did they call them in specially?
That I don't know if the record reflects that, and I'm not aware of those circumstances.
Where did they go in the house?
I don't know. Mr. Peels only stated that they went to the house and he yelled at them. At that point, I think he was at Officer Brenninger's car. Unfortunately, I'm not clear on whether or not he was actually inside the vehicle or positioned outside. But Mr. Peels was not in the garage anymore and not anywhere near the house to see where he went.
It was a question of consensual search. Did he agree to the search? Told him to go ahead and look around and see if there's anything you want?
No, I don't believe there was.
There was no statement like that by anybody?
No.
Someone was in the house, lurking in the house, armed, could pose a danger to the officers, could he not?
I don't believe that there was any indication of the facts to show that there was anybody else around.
Of an area, do they need that indication?
Again, I don't think there were articulable facts to point to that they needed to go into that area.
Do you need to have articulable suspicion?
Your Honor, at this point, I would say that would depend on the circumstances. If Mr. Peels had locked his garage door from the house to the garage, there may not be. But I don't think in any case that the record is fully factual on the area of that.
Let's see.
And if I may continue then, Your Honors. The third thing that Mr. Peels raises is that the district court abuses discretion for Mr. Peels calling a witness. The appellate court here reviews the exclusion of evidence for an abuse of discretion. A trial court has considerable discretion in determining the proper scope of rebuttal evidence. Here, Mr. Peels wished to call Peter Tenuse as a rebuttal witness. On the first day of trial, Peels warned the lower court that he would call Mr. Tenuse if appellees introduced evidence of actual guilt of a prior case for which Mr. Peels was found not guilty. At that point, the officers indicated that there would be no objection to Mr. Tenuse as a rebuttal witness. However, after the close of plaintiff's case in chief, the officers objected to Mr. Tenuse, stating that Mr. Tenuse would have been a more appropriate in the case in chief rather than a rebuttal witness, to which the lower court agreed. However, Mr. Tenuse's testimony would have focused on the incident for which the charges that Mr. Peels was arrested on September 15, 2003 would have involved. That was not presented before the court. Mr. Tenuse's testimony would have shown that Mr. Peels was innocent of the allegations that came from the September 15th arrest, but also go into the factual circumstances of those charges to show that they were fabricated against him.
What came out in it would needed to be rebutted?
Your Honor, I think it would have been necessary to show Mr. Peels' credibility. During the trial itself, Mr. Peels was questioned about his work history, about his previous run-ins with the law, and how those outcomes came about. And Mr. Tenuse would have at least provided information in regards to at least one incident with the run-in with the law.
No, that come out in cross-examination, what you're talking about, said Mr. Peels?
I'm not sure.
It was on his case, wasn't it?
That was during his cross-examination, yes.
The reason the judge said it should have been, he should have been called at that time as part of that, because that evidence was part of his case. That's all I'm trying to sort out, the difference between a rebuttal and just part of the testimony that was brought out by him in the first place.
But I think, Your Honor, part of the rebuttal is to reestablish Mr. Peels' credibility. It had been worn down during that cross-examination, and Mr. Peels should have had an opportunity to reestablish that during rebuttal. And since my allotted time is up, I will move on. Thank you, Your Honor, for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. We'll hear now from Mr. Drummy.
Good morning. My name is Bill Drummy, and I represent the City of Terre Haute and the officers that were involved in this litigation. As you've heard, we have two issues on appeal that arose during the summary judgment prior to trial and two issues that arose during the jury trial. Mr. Wallace was not trial counsel, so it's understandable that he has some difficulty remembering what happened at the trial, but I did try the case, so if those questions come up, I'm happy to answer them. I will address the issues in the same order as Mr. Wallace did and start with the issue of retaliatory prosecution. I think it's clear that in evaluating the summary judgment which was entered in favor of the city defendants, we have to read Mr. Peel's affidavits and Trey Gilbert, the arresting officer's affidavits, together. Now, it's interesting that Mr. Peels was not arrested for resisting arrest, but rather was arrested pursuant to a valid bench warrant issued for his failure to appear in circuit court on charges of failing to pay child support. Mr. Peels in his affidavit says, and I quote, Trey being Trey Gilbert, the arresting officer, Trey steps behind me and says there is a warrant for me, close quote. Now, it's interesting, if we look in Mr. Peel's prior affidavits, we see that he has prior employment as a Clay County, in the Clay County Sheriff's Department. He's also a criminal justice major at Indiana State University, just a couple classes short of graduation. So he certainly was aware that when there is a warrant for you, you don't run away. But anyway, Mr. Peel says, Trey steps up behind me and says there's a warrant for me, close quote. Quote, I turn to my friend and tell him that I am going to leave and for him to take me home, close quote. So that's all that Mr. Peel says about what he's told. Then we have to turn to what the undisputed evidence is from the arresting officer. Arresting officer says that evening he's working security at BW3's. He's wearing a shirt that has a embroidered badge and a police badge and large words police written on both the front and the back. He says, quote, I asked Peels to wait there, close quote. Quote, I informed Mr. Peels that he was not free to leave, close quote. I chased Mr. Peels northwest across the south, town south parking lot for approximately 300 yards, close quote.
No, he said, to coordinate the two affidavits, one, he said, according to Peels' affidavit, he said, I've got a warrant, got behind him. He said he's, what, wait here or what, something like that?
Actually, all Mr. Peel says is that Trey steps behind me and says there's a warrant for me.
He didn't say anything more than that.
Well, that's all Peel says.
According to him, at least. They didn't say.
He's silent as to what else may have been said.
All right. So,
and so I think the affidavits have to be read in conjunction with each other, at least with respect to the terms where they don't conflict.
Okay, and this was on the 15th of January?
Yes, Judge.
And the... and the so-called complaint or whatever it was that was sent to at least a police officer was, what, 10 days before that?
Well, that's interesting because there's no evidence that the complaint was sent
or received
or that Trey Gilbert knew about the complaint. The record's silent in that regard.
So whatever that officer's name that supposedly got it, there's no record that he got it?
No, there's no evidence that it, when it was... There's no evidence of if it was sent to the police department, when it was sent to the police department, or if it was received by the police department, or whether the officer had been notified that a complaint had been made against him. There is also no evidence in this case that Officer Gilbert played any role in the decision to prosecute. This is not a retaliatory arrest case. It's a retaliatory prosecution case. And there has to be that nexus between the officer has to do something more than arrest the individual, in this case, for fleeing. Because it's important to note we have the arrest pursuant to the warrant for failure to appear in court to pay child support. There's no question, even though Mr. Peels disputed that, that in his affidavit, the court has before it in the summary judgment motion certified copies of the arrest warrant and the order issuing it. Also an affidavit from the judge that he issued it, which was Mr. Peels, and said the judge had told him that he hadn't issued it. That there is no evidence that Mr. Gilbert had anything to do with the prosecution on the resisting arrest charge, the decision to prosecute on the resisting arrest charge. The second issue is with regard to the search. Again, Mr. Peels was arrested at his home pursuant to a valid warrant for battery resulting in personal injury to a young woman on the campus of Indiana State University and invasion of privacy. He was arrested pursuant to a warrant in his garage. It's our position that the viewing of the garage was pursuant to the law with regard to protective sweeps. It's interesting to note that in Mr. Peel's affidavit, he doesn't mention how long. He only says that one of the officers, quote, Officer Brenniger was looking around my garage as if he were searching for something. He doesn't mention how long that went on, and we know that nothing was taken, nothing was found, nothing was used as evidence in the case. He also says that other officers entered his home, but in those same affidavits, he states that he insisted that the officers lock his garage and his car. The garage is attached to his home. The confines of the protective sweep allow officers to check adjacent areas in the structure where individuals could be hiding and could present a risk to the officers or to other persons.
How about the dogs?
These are both canine officers. The dogs are with them. They were not brought in to search for contraband. This arrest was done by the drug enforcement unit of the Terrell Police Department, and two of their officers were canine officers, and the dogs were with them. They were not brought in to search the premises. They just happened to have their canine units with them, as they always do, because they traveled with those canine units. And I can find no cases that would say anything about bringing dogs in changes anything about protective sweep. And I don't know how these dogs, there's no evidence with regard to whether these were personal protection animals, whether they were drug detecting animals or explosive detecting animals.
Why did the drug enforcement guy show up to execute a warrant on a battery charge?
Because Mr. Peels had had numerous run-ins and previous arrests with the police. It's not in the record for this summary judgment issue, but he was known to carry firearms. And all nighttime arrests of those type of individuals in Terre Haute are done by the Drug Enforcement Division because they show up with five or six officers, and then if there is a problem, they can deal with it. And that was the reason why. Mr. Peels presented no evidence with regard to the length of the search. He presented no evidence of damages. Nothing was seized. It was an attached garage. And he specifically asked the officers, and this is in his affidavit, to close his garage, lock his car, and secure the building. So they did those things. So I think clearly this falls within protective sweep. It was a quick, cursory view to make sure that and no one could be hiding in the area and present a risk. There's no evidence that they went into drawers or smaller areas in which a person could not hide. The other two issues were issues that arose at trial. The first of those, which was brought up, was the fact that Judge Young, on the morning of trial, plaintiff's counsel asked to review the personnel files. Defendant objected and asked that the court review those in camera. Judge Young did that. It's reflected in the record that after he reviewed them, he confirmed there was nothing in them that would be admissible. And they were not going to be produced. Plaintiff made no objection to that. Plaintiff made no offer to prove. Plaintiff made no request that the personnel files be made a matter of record, so there was nothing preserved for appeal. Certainly that was within the discretion of the court, but there's nothing for the court here to review because those personnel files were not made a part of the record. The second issue that came up during trial was the rebuttal witness evidence that was discussed. And in that case, all the evidence, all the cross-examination about Mr. Peel's previous run-ins with the law and the facts underlying his previous arrests and charges occurred during the plaintiff's case in chief, during my cross-examination of Mr. Peel's. After plaintiff's case in chief, defendant presented its case in chief, and it was only after that that Mr. Peel's requested that Officer Tanous be allowed to testify. I objected on the basis that that would not be rebuttal. If he was there to rebut testimony that took place during Mr. Peel's cross-examination, during Mr. Peel's case in chief, that Officer Tanous should have been called in Mr. Peel's case in chief. Judge Young agreed with me and denied any rebuttal evidence, and there was no objection made by the plaintiff counsel. There was no offer to prove. With regard to what Officer Tanous would have stated, his only comment was, quote, okay.
I guess the officer was available.
He was available throughout. And it's ironic, I guess sometimes you have to be careful what you ask for, but he would have not presented evidence of Mr. Peels' innocence by any means, but that's beyond the scope here. But there's, again, nothing for the court to address on appeal because there's no offer to prove of what Officer Tanous would have said. And he could have either made an in-person offer to prove or there could have been an offer to prove on the record made by plaintiff's counsel. Neither of those things occurred. Those are all my comments unless there are additional questions by the court. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Drummy. How much time does Mr. Wallace have? Sir, you have a minute left. You have 1 minute left.
Thank you, Your Honors. Since this is my rebuttal time, I'm going to at least address within the first issue of retaliatory prosecution, there has to be something more because it's not the prosecutor involved here. Mr. Peels, even though there was a valid warrant for him, he was charged with resisting law enforcement, and that's the question here, whether or not he was told to stay, whether or not he left when there was only mention of a warrant, and whether or not that was true or not, and I think that raised a question of fact which was inappropriate for summary judgment. On the second issue of unlawful search, there's a question whether or not Mr. Peels had damages. I think that was only raised by the district court that there was no damages, therefore Mr. Peels should be bounced out on summary judgment, and that was never raised by either party within their briefs. However, I would like to point out that Mr. Peels was at least yelling at the officers to get out, shows his anxiety and stress at that point. The review of the documents as it relates to the personnel file, we'll point out that I believe the record only shows that the district judge stated that the records were void of any indication of excessive force. Plaintiff should have an opportunity to discovery to review the files due to any nature of claims and defenses, and this is especially true as it relates to whether or not that July 4th complaint went to the chief of police, as it was stated in Mr. Peels' affidavit on page 62 of the appendix. I thank you for your time, Your Honor, and we ask that these be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. Our thanks to both Mr. Wallace and Mr. Drummy, and the case will be taken under advisement.